I grew up in a family in Northeast Ohio. My grandmother always had the scanner on. You know, I always had that curiosity of what's going on, what are they doing, how are they, you know, responding to these emergencies. If someone's willing to sit in front of a camera and tell some of the darkest things in their life and expose that to the world, I take that very seriously. What I've heard from all of the subjects in my film is that I think my story can help someone else. If it can help someone else, I'm willing to tell. I'm willing to tell the darkest, dirtiest secrets in my life if it helps someone else.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my co-host Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMTB. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with award-winning filmmaker Conrad Weaver about PTSD 911. It's a documentary film about first responder post-traumatic stress. We invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the platforms for podcasts. And also our website is respondertv.com. All the past episodes and guest information is there. We'll be right back to speak with Conrad after this. In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMTB.
We'd like to welcome Conrad Weaver to the show. Conrad's an award-winning documentary filmmaker. He's also a podcast host, speaker, producer, and director with a passion for telling stories that matter. Conrad's been telling stories through documentary films for more than 10 years, and his films and work have taken him from the slums of Guatemala and the orphanages in Ukraine to the halls of Congress on Capitol Hill and everywhere in between. Whenever Conrad takes on a film project, he dives deep into the culture to get to know the story and become an expert on the subject. And today I think we're going to find out how Conrad has done a deep dive into the first responder culture and the importance of mental health in that culture. Conrad's films have won many prestigious awards, including a regional Emmy Award. And with his film PTSD 911, Conrad is passionate about raising awareness, ending the mental health stigma, and inspiring systematic change within departments and agencies. Another point we'd love to talk about is that change within the agencies and departments.
I went to a really dark place in my mind where suicide became an option. I was going through a divorce. I had lost a lot of relationships with people, and I was isolating.
While I was trying to heal from the traumas that had put me in the position that I was in, I suddenly lost all the support of all the guys I worked with.
Yeah, shots fired. Shots fired on Buffalo Roof. Study EMS, study EMS.
I felt guilty that he died.
About 15 minutes in, I'm just listening, and all you can hear is just people screaming. I was only 2 years into my career with Boston at this point.
I was so hypervigilant, and I couldn't shut my brain off.
They told me that I had PTSD and that they would give me some pills that would basically remove me from my feelings.
First responders are the toughest of the tough. They're the strongest of the strong, the most resilient people in our society. And they heroically sign up for these very, very difficult jobs in which, as a society, we outsource all of our trauma to them.
I remember the moment I was like, okay, I was up all night. It was just trauma after trauma after trauma. You know, the novelty of the job wore off really quick.
I couldn't think of how to get help without ruining my job.
There's a stigma in the profession that creates a barrier, a stigma in their agencies that prevents them from getting the help they need.
I didn't have somebody to talk to. I didn't have somebody that understood.
There was a part of me that said, okay, pick up the phone, call this person. This is how you're going to get yourself out of this skillfully and safely.
I look back at that period of my life and I just felt so completely, utterly isolated.
Now my ego wants to stop me from doing that. It wants to tell me, you got this. You don't need to let anybody know that this is going on.
Right now our profession is being challenged. We're going through a really, really difficult season. There's no time like the present where officer wellness has to be your number one priority. We have to do a better job as leadership in our profession to understand that is what we're dealing with, people. And I think it's really important that is our number one resource and that it has to be our number one priority moving forward if we want to change this profession.
Man, it's so much better when you have really amazing people in your life that you can walk through this stuff with. You don't have to do it alone.
With that, welcome to Respond to Resilience, Conrad.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It's good to be on the show.
It's nice to meet you.
It's good to meet you as well.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Well, let's dive right into the meat. how did you get started working on a documentary for first responders? Because it's quite a unique bunch that a lot of people don't really know a lot about in the mainstream.
Yeah, you're right. And so it came about by a previous film that I worked on. In 2018, I released a film called Heroin's Grip. It's a story about the opioid crisis. And I filmed that here locally in Maryland where I live. And over the course of those 2 years that I worked on that film, I was invited to do ride-alongs with the sheriff's department, with the police department, and with fire and EMS. And so I got a firsthand look at the opioid crisis through their eyes. And on one of those calls that I was with a police officer, and one of those calls, we were called to a fatal overdose scene. And, you know, for the first responders on scene, it was just another Tuesday. But for me as a civilian, it was an experience that I'll never forget. And on my drive home that afternoon, I was trying to clear the cobwebs in my mind, trying to figure out what I just had experienced. And I started then to think about the first responders on scene and their repeated exposure to scenes like that and scenes that are way worse than that. And so I started Googling this. I started searching, researching, and discovered this whole issue of post-traumatic stress in the first responder community. And as a business guy, as a filmmaker, I always say, okay, who's my competition? Who else has told this story? And so I started looking for other documentaries about this subject, found tons of films about, you know, returning veterans and their issues, but nearly nothing about first responders. And so I said, you know what, this is an important subject. I need to do a deep dive here. And so that's what I did over the past 3 years.
Well, I imagine this deep dive, you've learned quite a few things about first responders and the subject of mental health within that community. So can you talk about what you've learned and share some stories about ways that you've seen this topic handled in first responders?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I want to back up as, you know, I have a degree in psychology. Way back, you know, many moons ago, I was in college and I thought I'd go into medical school and that kind of didn't turn out so well. So I decided to go into the mental health field. And so I studied psychology and worked in a psychiatric hospital for a number of years. And so the issue of mental health has been kind of on my mind ever since then. And so doing a story about mental health and first responders is really kind of a natural fit for me. Because the other part of my life, I grew up in a family in Northeast Ohio. My grandmother always had the scanner on. She had a scanner sitting on the shelf. And whenever we would come to grandma's house, you know, the scanner was there. It was a small rural community, so there wasn't a whole lot of activity, but, you know, it was still there. And so, and I kind of joke with my kids, you know, I've become my grandmother because now I have my app on my phone. And every time I hear sirens, the scanner comes on to find out what's going on. And so, you know, I always had that curiosity of what's going on? What are they doing? How are they, you know, responding to these emergencies? And, you know, I live in Emmitsburg, Maryland. And, you know, if you're in the fire community, you probably know about Emmitsburg. In fact, we had our big event this weekend, the National Fallen Firefighter Memorial was this weekend. And so Emmitsburg is kind of the hub for a lot of fire activity. And so I've built relationships with our local volunteer fire department, and they actually invited me to, I have the I Am Responding app on my phone. And so they invited me to jump on a truck whenever there's an emergency. And so I can go and shoot photos and video. But as I learned more about the issue of mental health and wellness with the first responder community, I started seeing first responders through a different set of lenses. That, you know, we, you know, rightly so, we say the first responders are heroes. They run into burning buildings. They run toward the gunshots. They, you know, do all these amazing things. But yet we often forget, as civilians, we forget that they're also human beings. They're human beings with families, with feelings, with emotions, with struggles, just like all the rest of us do. Mm-hmm. And yet they respond to things that no one should see. And they get involved in situations that no one should ever be involved in. And, you know, then also, you know, thinking of my dispatcher friends, they hear things that no one should have to hear. Mm-hmm. And yet they do it over and over and over again. And those things build up. Those, you know, it's like one detective I interviewed said, you know, my cup got full. And when my cup got full, my life went off the rails. And I think we see that over and over again. You know, there's, you know, personally, there's only so much that I can handle before things start going sideways. And I think that's for all of us, and for, you know, first responders are no exception to that.
You know, I'm sitting here listening to what you're saying, Conrad, and I'm also an EMT, not just a trauma therapist. And some of the pattern I think that we get into, for some of us, it's jumping right back into our childhood, right? It's like jumping right back into times and things we shouldn't have been involved in or seen then either.
Absolutely.
And so there's this strange comfort level, I think, and you've probably stumbled upon this with some of your first responders. They're used to dealing with this chaos and havoc and being the calm in the storm, if you will.
You know, it's surprising that, you know, many of the first responders that, in fact, the three primary characters in my film, their childhoods all had trauma.
Yes.
And I'm finding that across the country that many first responders, and probably because the reason they became first responders was like... what his name, his mom always said, look for the helpers, the TV show for kids.
Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers, yeah. You know, always look for the helpers. And I think that's what happened with many first responders. You know, if you grew up in chaos, you know, you look for the helpers, and then you became a helper.
Yeah.
It's that topic is actually something that Stacy, our colleague, and I are going to be speaking about on another podcast this weekend, because it's a fascinating topic that in so many ways, being a first responder can give someone who's been through that kind of chaotic childhood, or maybe without a functional family, the opportunity to kind of fix some of these situations as they go out and respond in the world. So, it's so interesting you touched on that, Conrad.
You know, one of the things that, and I'm not going to go too deep into this because you have to watch the film to get more, but one of the psychologists that are working with, he talks about how our emotions and a critical incident and an event, those that emotion gets attached to that event. And it's really the meaning behind the event, the emotion. And so it's oftentimes those events that have happened in our past that create meaning toward an event that happens now. And so that's often where that trauma, comes into play.
And I would agree with that. We see that in EMDR all the time, where someone is coming in not for the event, but for the feeling that they have about themselves as a result of the event. And that similar feeling is usually threaded with past memories. So we see the exact same thing that you're stumbling on.
Yeah. And we kind of dive into that a little bit with our firefighter in our film. And he talks about the things that have happened in his childhood and how that impacts him today.
Conrad, I'm looking at the poster for your film, PTSD 911. And it does have a firefighter with a very, I would say, intense expression. Can you talk a little bit about that photo and how it relates to the film?
Sure. That photo, I took that photo about 5 or 6 years ago, right here in Emmitsburg. One morning I got up and I work from my home office here, and we have a volunteer fire station, and I heard the siren go off, as it does many times when there's a call. And so typical me, I get on the app, I find out what's going on. Oh, there's a fire downtown Emmitsburg. It's right on Main Street. And so I look out the front door, I see the smoke. I grab my camera and I run, and I go up to Main Street, and there's an apartment building on fire there. And it ends up, we lost two lives that day in that fire. And in the aftermath, I was kind of hanging around with the firefighters and the people on the road there. And Josh Brotherton is that firefighter's name. He's the lieutenant. And I just happened to snap that photo just of him kind of looking, off into the distance. And I just recently, in talking with one of the chiefs, he said, yeah, Josh was the primary on that fire. He was first in and helped pull one of those bodies out. And that was just literally probably 15 minutes after that happened when I snapped that photo. And so Josh, obviously, he gave me permission to use the photo and as the, for the poster. But that was really raw. It was very real. It's not posed. It was just that emotion. You can see the emotion in his eyes. You can see that feeling of that, just that look of what did I just experience. And so I'm really thankful that Josh allowed me to use that photo, because it really speaks to what the subject is about.
Well, I commend you for using something raw and vulnerable in that way, because I think first responders are often portrayed in the media or in Hollywood. There's always this glamour about it. And I think that what you're describing and your picture shows that it's unglamorous. It's a bad day for us when we have to be with someone who's perished. We feel that. Yeah. And I think using that kind of a picture is good, because that in and of itself breaks through some of the stigma and some of the glorifying, glamorizing that happens with the media.
And in a small town like this, many people know each other, and I don't know if Josh knew the victims that day, but there's a good chance that he did. And so that emotion is even more raw, if you know somebody like that.
Yes, absolutely. The dynamics working in a department in a small town are very different than a big city, because for that reason.
So I was wondering, when you did this deep dive into first responder world, what are some of the things that surprised you the most?
I think one of the things that was a pleasant surprise was just the camaraderie and feeling of family that many people have in the first responder community. I have to say this, that not everybody. There's, it's not always a close-knit family. Sometimes it's just the opposite. But for many people experience that, this is and even in some sense, I can see that at our local fire station here. It's a close-knit group of people. They kind of, the firehouse is kind of church for them. And so it's that place where they come to comfort each other, to have fun, to celebrate, and to work. And so I see that when you have those kind of close relationships and you have a close-knit team, you can really do amazing things. But then I see the opposite as well. I talked to a firefighter in a local agency as well, who he said, our firefighters come from three or four different states to come to work. And so our lives don't intersect at all outside of the firehouse. And he said that can be problematic. And so you see those, that diversity of cultures within the fire community, as well as, you know, law enforcement community. I talked to one local firefighter who works for our county, and he lives 3 hours away, you know, so he drives in for his shift, you know, a couple times a week. And, you know, he's somewhat connected to the community, but, you know, not really. And so those kind of things can be problematic, especially when you're talking about post-traumatic stress. And if someone's driving 3 hours to go home, you're not going to get that interaction. You're not going to get that face-to-face time that, you know, more local people can experience. And so you can, you can sometimes hide that much better if you're struggling.
Yeah.
When it comes to occupational cancer exposures, members of the fire service are some of the highest risk professionals nationwide. Firefighters Against Cancer and Exposures, also known as the FACES Foundation, is an advocacy organization established to bring awareness, resources, and peer support to responders in need of additional help in battling potential cancer diagnoses or critical concerns. The FACES Foundation was established by a national alliance of first responders to offer supplemental resources for firefighters. One of its core initiatives is cancer awareness in the form of prevention and early detection, supporting vigilance about occupational cancers and cancer recurrence through our national Get Checked Now campaign. Also, the FACES Foundation publishes a major public catalog of resources for the many areas of need, including information on clinical and mental health therapies, benefits and compensations, funding sources, and financial strategies. For more information, please visit the FACES website at facesusa.org.
Now, Conrad, you've obviously, you know, vetted and contacted a number of responders to make this film, to create these interviews. How receptive are they to get in front of a camera and, you know, talk about this stuff and be, you know, real, transparent, raw about mental health challenges? What's that like? And why do you think they're more willing to do that now than ever before?
Yeah, it was a challenge just to start, you know, okay, how do we find the right people? How do we find our subjects? And one thing that we did is we set up a post on our website where people could submit their stories. And we got dozens and dozens of stories on there. And so I have a co-producer, Nancy, who vetted those stories. And so she would set up Zoom meetings with these folks and kind of dive into their story to see if it's a story that would fit with what we want to tell. And or if they were just looking for their 15 minutes, because there's a few people out there who are, you know, looking for that camera. But we landed on these three individuals because, one, they had very different stories, and they were willing to get in front of a camera, which is not easy, especially when you're talking about some of the darkest part of their lives, of their journey. And to be quite honest, it wasn't easy for me. There were times when some of our subjects wouldn't return a call or wouldn't even return a text message. I didn't hear from them sometimes for months because they were in such a dark place. And that can be challenging when they've signed on to tell their story. And, you know, I want to go capture, you know, their day to day. And they say, you know, not today. I'm not there today. Or they don't even respond. And so that was a bit of a challenge for me. But I take that responsibility very seriously. If someone's willing to sit in front of a camera and tell some of the darkest things in their life and expose that to the world, for the whole world to see, I take that very seriously. And I want to do them right. I want to you know, tell the story in an honest and authentic way. But what I've heard from all of the subjects in my film is that I think my story can help someone else. If it can help someone else, I'm willing to tell it. I'm willing to tell the darkest, dirtiest secrets of my life if it helps someone else. And that's what gives me hope. And I think it gives them hope. It gives them a sense of perhaps going through all these challenges. I hate to say this, but maybe it was worth it if it makes an impact for someone else's life. And, you know, I had I had one of my subjects that called me one day and they said, you probably don't want me in your film anymore because I picked up again. They started drinking again. And I said, that's exactly why I want you in the film. Because that's the story. It's not, I was broken, I'm fixed, all's good. No, it's a journey. And, you know, my desire for all of my subjects was to track with them on their journey, wherever that led, good or bad. And, you know, yeah, that was the story I wanted to tell, because I didn't want to wrap it up in a pretty bow and say, here's the solution. Everybody's better. Let's go, you know, drink margaritas. You know, that's not how it works. And so we wanted to be authentic to that story.
So, Conrad, who are you making this documentary for?
That's a great question. I think there's a couple of sets of people that I'm making it for. First, I'm making it for the first responder. I'm wanting the first responders to see that it is possible, it is okay to ask for help. And here's someone who did. Here's, you know, a big, tough, tattooed firefighter who was broken and asked for help, got broken again, reached out for help again, and had this journey. And so I'm making it for those first responders who perhaps say, not me, I'm a tough guy, doesn't bother me. You know, I had one interview that it's probably one of my favorite interviews in the whole thing. It was a crusty old detective from down in Texas. And he was like, I didn't believe in PTSD. That was just for the weak-minded, you know, until my life went off the rails. You know, and so the first audience I have is really those first responders for the rank and file, but also for the command staff and the leaders who may not be on, you know, well, you know, put this rub some dirt on it. You'll be fine. No, you won't be fine. I want those leaders to see, here are leaders in our, you know, whether it's a police agency or a fire or a 911 center, here are leaders who are making changes, who are seeing the value of creating a culture of wellness, not just programs of wellness, but a culture of wellness that it permeates everything. And we found some of those agencies that are doing amazing work. And we can't wait to share those stories because we think that will inspire other leaders to say, you know what, if they can do it there, we can do it here. Because I had one chief, and I won't say exactly what he said because I want you to watch the movie, but the words he said and the why behind of what they do was amazing. And it's making a huge difference. And we interviewed some of the people that were impacted by his decision of building this culture of wellness. And the third audience I really want to reach is the general public. I think the general public really is clueless as to how trauma impacts first responders. We see the big red fire truck go down the road. We see the ambulance crew. We see the police officers. And we don't think about they have to go in and do things that no one should have to do. You know, and when there's a suicide or when there's a terrible accident or there's other kinds of crazy things that happen, you know, on top of, you know, if you're a law enforcement officer, now you're a target, you know, you have a target on your back. And so we don't see those and how that impacts our first responders. And so I want the general public to get a better understanding of that.
Right.
So those are my top three audience members. And it kind of is in line with our goals. And our goals are to raise awareness, to help break the stigma of asking for help, and to inspire change in agencies.
I think it's wonderful, and I can't wait to see it. I know David and I will both be waiting for that date to come out so we can watch. You know what's interesting, as you were talking, and David may feel the same way that I do as a fellow first responder, but you kind of get these two polar opposite responses from civilians. It's either tell me your worst call, because they don't understand that no one really wants to tell someone who doesn't need to know about it what it was, or once they find out what you do, they don't want to hear anything. So I think it can be a very polarizing experience to be with civilians at times.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one thing that I've learned early on, never to ask what's your worst call. You know, I don't know that I've ever done that, but I just kind of knew that that probably was a cool thing to do. And even in the film, in fact, someone, we had a preview of the film on Monday and at a local theater, and invited some people to come, some first responders and some others to come, just to kind of give me feedback before we go into final edits. And I had someone say, we could probably use some more, you know, more graphic scenes and stuff. I said, probably not, because if you're a first responder, you've seen all that stuff. And why do you need to be traumatized by it again? And so that's not, you know, I don't want to go down that path of just putting graphic stuff up just for the sake of, you know, shock value. That's not my style. And so if you're coming to this film expecting to see that, you're going to be disappointed, because that's not there. We don't mince words and stories, but we stay away from gratuitous trauma. Right. And that's intentional.
Well, just to back up on some of the things you mentioned earlier, the fact that you have really three target audiences that this film can speak to me is, I think it's incredible, especially in, you know, my heart is the part of leadership, and that you have leaders who are so intent on changing the culture, committed to changing the culture. And I think that's going to have a huge impact on the responder community, especially the leadership out there, because I think the rank and file, you know, is probably pretty aware that there's these problems exist and that they need help. But without the support from above, it can be really difficult for them to get the right help at the right time. So kudos for, you know, being able to make a film that can actually speak to three main audiences.
You know, it's interesting, just the other day I was talking to someone, and he was saying how many times the chief, the top leader in an organization, is all on board and they're kind of gung-ho, let's do this, but it's those captains and those lieutenants that are kind of, you know, working the desk, that have forgotten what it's like being out there on the street, that are the ones that are the toughest to get into, to change that mindset.
And, you know, as a therapist, I would ask the question, well, what's going on for those captains and lieutenants? And I think sometimes there's a lot of avoidance, because when you open that Pandora's box again, you're not going to close it, right? So if they kind of ignore the problem and act like it doesn't exist and keep their head down, it'll just go away, right?
It'll catch up to him.
Right.
You know, in fact, I have a lieutenant in the film, a police lieutenant, who says, you know, you might be able to walk, you know, for 20 years with this, but it's going to catch up to you.
Yeah.
He said, because it did to me.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah.
Well, Conrad, before we get into some more specifics about the film, when it's going to be released, where we can see it, I heard you tell a story about a bicycle, and I'd love you to talk about how a bicycle is part of your plan for the rollout of this film.
Yeah. So literally, no pun intended, with the rollout. I'm a cyclist, kind of a weekend warrior, you know, on a road bike. And for a long time, I've been wanting to do a cross-country bike trip. So coast to coast, ocean to ocean. And a few actually a couple of years ago, I landed on this YouTube channel with Ryan Van Duzer, and he's a YouTuber, outdoor adventurist. I don't think he even owns a car. And he did several cross-country bike trips, and he documented these, and we followed along. And it was, and he inspired me to say yes to do a bike trip. And so I said, hey, you know, I'm not getting any younger. Now's the time. I have a film coming out. Why don't we do a bike and film tour? And so my good friend John, we were talking one day, and I said, hey, John, do you want to go on a bike ride with me? He goes, yeah, sure. Where are we going? Well, we're riding from Oregon to Maryland. He goes, what? And he thought about it for a minute, and he said, I'm in. Let's go. And so we are planning a cross-country bike trip starting in Astoria, Oregon on May 15th. And we are planning on staying at firehouses along the route. And if they put us up for the night, we'll show them the movie for free. And then we're also planning major screening events at major cities on the bike route throughout those 2 months that we'll be on the road. So it's going to be an adventure like I've never had before. So
it sounds like another documentary film,
it
right?
Does.
In itself.
And you know what? I'm a filmmaker, so of course we're gonna document this thing. I got to learn how to fly my drone while riding my bike, though.
Oh, yeah, that'll be an advanced skill. Yeah. That'll be amazing.
Well, instead of men in kilts, it'll be men on bikes and firehouses.
Right. And so we welcome people. Once we're gonna announce the route here shortly. We just finished mapping it out, and we're gonna announce the route in the major cities shortly, and we welcome anybody to come join us for a day or two or a week or five, you know, to join us on the route. We would love if you once we announce the route and you see that your region is in our sites, we would love to get an invitation to stay and to sleep and to shower and maybe some food. And
it's brilliant.
We'll show a movie.
It's brilliant using firehouses as your way stations or, you know, overnights, because as you mentioned, they have all those essential things, but also great mechanical skills if you have to fix a bike. So.
Absolutely. You know, and I can't announce this yet, but we're close to landing a major sponsor for bikes.
Okay.
It's really super exciting. So I can't announce it yet, but that's coming.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a really cool adventure, and I want to hear more about it as that gets nearer. So Conrad, share with us, where can we find your website, any social media, and then the release of the film? What are the specifics on that?
Yep. You can find all the information about the film at PTSD911.com. Mm-hmm. If you just go there, you can sign up for our email newsletters that we send out each week that gives you updates. And if you're on our email list, you're kind of the insider group and you get the advanced knowledge of everything. You can also book a screening. There's a button there. It says book a screening. And if you fill out that form, my wonderful assistant will get back in touch with you to start talking about dates and places and all that, all the details to book a screening event. And we'll also have all the information about the cities that we're going to go to. The bike ride information will be there eventually.
Mm-hmm. What's the time frame for screenings?
So we are premiering the film in Irving, Texas on November 3rd this year. So that premiere is coming up in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And so we're really excited. We chose the Dallas-Fort Worth area because of one of our major agencies that we're working with is there, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Mm-hmm. Their Texas chapter has a conference that week, and COPS, the Concerns of Police Survivors, also has a conference that week. And so it kind of all worked to bring all those organizations together to, hey, let's do the film premiere there on that date. Originally, I was hoping to have it on October 28th, which is National First Responder Day. And I was going to have it in Washington, D.C., but then I learned that all the members of Congress are gone and D.C. is a ghost town because of the election's coming up and it's October. Congress is in recess. So I said, well, forget that. We'll come back to D.C. later. But so Dallas, the Dallas metro area is our premiere. And then we're still working on this, but we have a possibility of getting a national theatrical release through Fathom Events. We're talking to them. They want to preview the film, so I'll be sending them the film next week to preview. If that happens, we'll be in about 1,200 theaters nationwide sometime in January. So fingers crossed that may happen. But right now, what we're doing is we're booking screenings. I've got several dozen people we're talking to already about bringing the film to their community on top of our bike ride. So if, like I said, if you want to book a screening, there is some cost associated, but they're not that much. And if you, you know, get an organization together and raise some funds locally, you can have a really powerful screening event. And I encourage people to work with their local business partners and bring together the community, bring together your first responder groups to do these events, because I think it'll be a powerful event for your community. But then we're also planning a digital release, a streaming release that will be a streaming event. And so we're at the national world premiere in Dallas. We are actually filming the Q&A session after the event. We have Tom Morris Jr. is our MC for that. He is, if you're familiar with Live PD, the show that got kicked off of A&E, well, Tom Morris was one of the co-hosts on Live PD. And so he's on our advisory board, and he's coming to Dallas to MC the Q&A. We're filming that, and then for the streaming premiere, we're going to replay that Q&A session as a part of the streaming premiere. And for the streaming, you'll buy a ticket for it, and your agency or your household can watch it together. And so, and then later, it'll also be available on the streamers like Amazon and other platforms like that for the general public. But then here's probably the most exciting thing for me anyway, is we are creating a digital toolkit for first responder agencies. So that'll contain the film. It'll contain other things that were not included in the film that we feel that are important, as well as other resources from the National Alliance on Mental Illness, ICISF, and a few others that are helping us create a digital toolkit that will be made available for sale for agencies to use in training around the country. So that will be coming in early 23 as well.
You have an exciting year ahead of you.
I do.
Well, Conrad, I wish you Godspeed, and I truly, truly thank you for shining a light on this issue.
Well, it's been a pleasure and an honor to work with first responders. And, you know, I've worked with a lot of different groups of people in the various films that I've produced. I've worked with farmers in the Midwest. I've worked with people with water issues in California and the far west. I've worked with the recovery community, you know, working with the opioid film, and having worked now with first responder groups, I think it's one of my favorite groups of people because they really care. They really care about what they do. They really care for others. They serve their communities relentlessly, and that is amazing. And so I'm really grateful to have the privilege of telling the story.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to the release, Conrad, and continued success with all these projects surrounding PTSD 911, the movie. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today, and check out Conrad's website for all further information on this amazing project. We'd like to invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. We're on bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the podcast platforms. We're also on respondertv.com. That's our website where you can find the past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself. Take care.